This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Baker's yeast and E. coli are the workhorses of modern-day biology labs. We've engineered them to create all kinds of stuff for us. But why stop there? Why not tinker with some of the other billions of microbes thought to exist on the planet? Bugs that thrive in salty lakes, in the snow, or underground? Who knows? They might have just the genes we need to make next-generation materials and medicines. Great idea. Wish you had thought of it. Well, DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, is already one step ahead on that one. The deputy director of their Biological Technologies Office, Alicia Jackson, is here in our New York studios to share a few secrets, we hope, about DARPA's biological ambitions. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Jackson.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Why biology? We know we've seen robots, things like that.
Sure. So when most people think about advanced technology, they'll think about things like you just said, robotics or hypersonic vehicles, Internet of Things. But when you look at what biology can do things that no other man-made technology or chemistry can do, right? It can replicate. It can scale from one to millions to billions in hours. It can adapt. It's programmable through its genetic code. No other technology that we know of can do these things.
So you're just engineering other stuff. You're engineering the microbes.
Biology is technology from our point of view. And if we can program biological systems like we program computers, we might be able to harness, like you said, those secrets of biology.
So what's on your to-do list then? What would you like to make?
Using microbes, what would we like to make? We'd like to make plastics that won't melt if they heat up. So you could imagine making metal parts instead out of the metals that we have today, out of plastics. So you could have incredibly lightweight aircraft. Mm-hmm. You could think about making wires that stretch. So could you imagine having conductive wires that you could actually stretch and wrap around so you could truly just roll up your phone or fold it in half?
Mm-hmm. And do you have to find new microbes to do these things, or do you have some in mind already? Do you have to search for the right microbes?
Sometimes you do, because sometimes the microbes that we have right now, like you said before, just don't have the blueprints already to make those interesting materials that we're looking for.
Mm-hmm. How would you compete with the whole new world of nanoparticles? Are you in competition with them, or can you make a hybrid of the two?
I think that we're in close collaboration with them, because the key thing that's been missing from nanotechnology is the ability to assemble those nanoparticles up in a controllable way. But biology does this naturally. It naturally handles materials at the nanoscale to build them up into bulk materials.
Mm-hmm. So are we just at the beginning of this whole era of using the microbes, or are we halfway through?
We're just at the beginning, but there's so much we can accomplish already. There's a lot of low-hanging fruit.
Mm-hmm. We saw with the Ebola crisis that it's impractical to try to manufacture antibodies. It's just too slow, right?
Correct.
And you're interested in an alternative. Tell us about that.
We're interested in something called gene-encoded antibodies. So instead of just giving you a protective antibody straight, the protein itself, what we want to do is encode the blueprint for that antibody in DNA or RNA. And the magic about DNA or RNA is that all the cells in your body can read that. So if we give you that blueprint, your cells in your body can read that code and generate the antibodies itself, and we can give you immunity within hours against any infectious disease.
How do you do that? Tell me how you do that.
Well, first what we need to do is find somebody who's recovering from the disease, because floating through their veins is liquid gold, are those protective antibodies. Mm-hmm. Then what we do is we sort through their blood and find the most effective antibody that they have. And then using new computational tools that we have, we basically figure out what the blueprint for RNA or DNA should be. And the best part of all of this is that you can chemically synthesize DNA or RNA. So unlike if you make a traditional antibody, you don't have to use another biological system. So it's very cheap, it's very fast, and it doesn't require any sort of cold chain. And we can just give you a shot in the arm of that RNA or DNA.
So you have to find the microbes that will make the RNA and DNA in large quantities for us?
You don't even need to use a microbe. We have chemical synthesis mechanisms.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. What kind of new technologies do you need? I'm going to give you a blank check. Giving DARPA a blank check is it's like an oxymoron. But I'm going to give you a blank check. What kind of things don't you have that you would like to see, some magic machine or something.
Sure.
That you'd like to have.
There's two critical things missing from biotechnology today, and you find them everywhere else in every other high-tech industry. Number one is a large amount of computer scientists and data analytics. Biology is a big data problem, but we haven't brought a lot of the tools that we're using in other fields, especially, for example, all the apps that you have and things like that, to bear in biology. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is automation. You still go into a bio lab today, you'll find incredibly sophisticated, highly trained postdocs pipetting colorless liquids around by hand. That's mm-hmm. crazy. These folks should be thinking about, you know, genius ideas that they can implement, not pipetting things around by hand. There should be machines to do this.
Mm-hmm. Our number 844-724-8255 if you'd like to talk with Dr. Jackson. Alicia Jackson is here in our studios talking about DARPA's biological ambitions. How old is this program? When did this program start, your biological program?
We call it Living Foundries, mm-hmm. and that started about 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. But the biotech office at DARPA has only been around for a little over a year.
Is it late to the game? I mean, why did you start it 4 years ago why only a year and a half ago?
That we started the office?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's a new way of looking at biology. It's not your traditional biomedical sciences, fundamental exploratory type of science office that you might find at, for example, the National Science Foundation. Mm-hmm. The thing that's unique about this is we're, for the first time, at a point where we can start to think about using biology to build capabilities, to actually have impact.
Well, speaking of the NSF, what can you do that they can't do that we need to have you do it?
Sure. So what NSF is very good is for kind of going across the research community and looking at what's bubbling and seeding lots of interesting ideas. What DARPA is great at is we go harvest the ideas that are ready for prime time, that we can actually go build a new technological capability off of. So we kind of harvest those and then drive them into a product.
One of the areas you're interested in is making us good use of all the open source stuff.
Yes.
That's out there. There's a lot of open source stuff. That, how would we make better use of it?
For biology.
Yeah. How do you get more bang for your buck?
Absolutely. One of the things we'd love to see more of is publishing of data and making it open to everyone. For example, clinical trial data would be incredibly useful for folks to be able to sort through to draw interesting conclusions.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones. Our number is 844-724-8255. Let's go to Ray in Modesto, California. Hi, Ray.
Hi. I was reading in Popular Science this year, Stanford studying a new bug that lives and eats electricity and generates like a nanotube that's conductive. Has DARPA looked into anything like that?
What you're talking about is microbial fuel cells, and these are super interesting, but it's unclear whether they're going to be cost competitive anytime soon, especially, you know, earlier we were just hearing about Elon Musk's new giant battery factory that's out there. So I think it's super interesting, not clear it's ready for implementation.
These are bacteria that make electricity?
Correct.
Because I remember years ago, we had a scientist from the Naval Research Lab, right near where you guys are, on the Potomac, and they had discovered a bacteria in the mud in the Potomac.
Yes.
And it was very funny because the next week after that, we got a call from the Secretary of the Navy to talk about that. And so we talk a lot about the human biome, the microbiome, the biome that's in the soil, there's a biome in people. This is like untouched, untapped territory, isn't it?
It's totally untouched. And there's not only the microbiome, but there's something even more interesting called the virome.
The virome,
which
is
even larger. There's all this amazing capability out there ready for us to go harvest it.
Mm-hmm. And that's what you're set up to do is to work on this, to
Absolutely.
Harvest this stuff?
Yes.
How many scientists do you think in the world, or let's talk about the U.S., are working on this kind of thing right now? Are they thousands, hundreds?
Probably thousands right now. Mm-hmm. But we need way more, and we need people from other fields, not just biology, who can come bring a different perspective to the problem.
Mm-hmm. Are you looking to recruit scientists?
Yes, we are, very actively. Either to come to DARPA and build new programs or to come work with us to build new technologies.
Do you think that people are sort of scared to go work for defense? Anything that starts with the word defense on it?
I think until they meet us, some people have some hesitation.
You're as geeky as the rest of us. How did you get involved in this? What's your background?
I have a very unconventional background. I did my PhD at MIT in nanotechnology and quickly decided I did not want to spend the rest of my life in the lab.
Right.
So I took a jump and went into science policy and worked for Senator Jeff Bingaman, who at the time was the chairman of the Senate Energy Committee. One of the best experiences I've ever had. And the thing that I got out of that was a real national perspective. How do we put in place good science and technology policy that's going to move the nation forward? Mm-hmm. I got a little fed up with the politics. Policy was great. And then I decided that at DARPA, I could bring this national perspective together with the ability to actually drive real technological change. And that's a very unique thing to have access to.
So you really think you're making a difference?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Every day.
Yeah. But how long can you be doing this for?
That's the interesting thing about DARPA. We only can stay 3 to 5 years.
They kick you out?
They kick you out. They want fresh ideas constantly coming in. We don't want a big bureaucracy to grow up within the organization. So it keeps things very nimble, and it always keeps things a little crazy.
Hmm. All right. Well, we expect now that you've been on, we expect big things out of this program. And we thank you very much for sharing the secrets of DARPA with us today.
Thank you.
Dr. Jackson. Alyssa Jackson is working for DARPA. She's deputy director of DARPA's Biological Technologies Office in Arlington, Virginia. Good luck to you wherever you go following DARPA. Thanks for being with us today. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, how well do you know your emotions? Could a kid's movie help you know them better? We'll talk about this new film, animated film, Pixar's Inside Out. It's really different. We'll talk about why that is. Stay with us.